Blog Talk Radio.
Take me into another world where I can be free and erase the pain that leaves bloodstains and scars that never healed. I could not reveal the open wounds that stitches can conceal. Filling my heart away with no delay. You portrayed innocence and faithfulness, yet your insecurities and hatefulness showed your unfaithfulness. It was not necessary to argue or debate. If I had waited patiently so many nights to turn to days, I was not astonished or amazed. But my woman's intuition forewarned me, but I failed to listen. Often reminisce on the good times, but those moments we miss. Making decisions with your head without a brain explained to me as a man it was hard to maintain, and I should not fret or complain because protection was provided. But that was a complete lie, because you entered my soul with no protection or contraceptives to protect my heart. Instead, you infected me with your unfaithful disease, and this is just as deadly as HIV, for I believe you were trying to kill me. You were destroying my mind mentally, stabbing my soul internally, and murdering my spirit spiritually. Emotionally, I was deceased, 6 feet deep, buried under earth, because my worth wasn't worth being a part of your life. In spite of my sleepless nights, I did all I could do to be the perfect wife, but nothing I did delighted you. Over and over again, I tried to unite with you, but you were so stuck in one place, unable to erase yesterday. And the same tune continued to play, the same sad song.
I'm so alone. I miss you.
I was missing you, but what could I do? My body could not endure another bruise. I played to win, yet I always lose. Confused, misused, and abused. I had to make a choice, so I choose to leave. My reason? I deserve so much more than what you had to offer me. I wanted to control my own destiny and not have some man controlling me. My best bet was to let go and leave. Allow this chapter in my book to end as I begin the sequel to a new Genesis and start the beginning. Gathering the pieces to my broken heart and mending my mind, body, and soul back together again. I could no longer pretend. For 7 long years, I watched the tears fall like rain in the
storm keeps on raging.
Asking, when will it come to a cease? When will there be peace? When can I release so I can rebuild? A woman not made of bricks this time, but made of steel. You will no longer tear me down with your terrorist attacks, because tonight I take my life back. It belongs to me.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Delicious Talk. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. Good evening. I'm having some little technical difficulties with my chat room. For some reason, I cannot type anything into the chat room. I did put the introduction up in there, but I don't know what's going on. I don't think it's my computer, though, because I had this problem last week when I was on somebody else's computer. Now it's happening on my computer, so I think it has something to do with Blog Talk. In any event, if I can get to the chat room, I will. But like I said, I'm having technical difficulties. So how's everybody's weekend going so far? We had a little heat wave going on here yesterday. Today it was a little bit better, but it still was a little gooey outside, because I went out later on this evening. It was still kind of choking, kind of air was going on out there, but still a beautiful day. Nothing else has been going on, really. I'm expecting my guest, which is Monica Day, to call in any moment, and I think she's on the line now. I'm going to read her bio. I thought she was on the line. Okay, she's not on the line anymore. But anyway, that's going to be my special guest for this evening, Monica Day. She's a young lady who's been through the storm, came out a survivor. She's a spoken word artist and a poet, among other things. And like I said, I'm going to read her bio because I think she is on the line now. Okay. Monica Day is a voice for many silent whispers, a leader, advocate, poet, and women's activist. Hailing from Durham, North Carolina, this fearless woman and fierce spitfire poet touches audiences around the country with her biting poetry, soulful stories, and heartfelt commitment to the healing of women and community. Through the gift of spoken word poetry, Day shares her intimate story of surviving sexual abuse and domestic violence. Day was raped at a church convention at the age of 11, a teenage runaway, and in her first abusive relationship at the age of 13. Bad choices and hanging with the wrong crowd led Day to a youth detention facility and classified as a juvenile delinquent at the age of 14. She was incarcerated for 2 years. After her release from the youth detention facility, Day was still searching to fill the void of emptiness she carried in her spirit since the beginning of her abusive journey. In search for love and acceptance, she found herself wrapped in the arms of another abusive man at the age of 17. How did she survive? Day shares her story as her testimony that God and her gift of poetry was truly her survivor, her savior, I'm sorry. Through poetry, she captured all generations and gives hope to those facing the same obstacles she has overcame. Capturing the poetry scene by storm at the young age of 19, she performed her first open mic at Yancey's Nightclub in Raleigh, North Carolina. The release of her first book, And You Thought You Had Problems, Well, This Is My Life, in January 2004 directed her path towards community activists, poetry slams, theatrical performances, community organizing, workshop facilitations, media marketing, and radio personality. Talents she never knew she possessed. Since dedicating her life full-time to the gift of poetry and to the women's movement, Day has featured at many of the local poetry venues, universities. There's so much more to this young lady, but I'm not going to, you know, read all of this. We're going to talk with her and let her give us, you know, just what's been going on with her life and, you know, how she's held up since being raped at a church convention and, you know, turning her life around and getting to where she is now. And I'm going to bring in my co-host, and then we'll bring in Monica Day. Hello, Rhea. How you doing, darling?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am fantastic. Did you hear the bio that I just read of Monica Day?
Majority of it. I think I missed the first few lines, but I got the gist of it.
Okay. Well, she seems like a remarkable young lady, you know, going through
exactly.
What she went through at the age of 11 and, you know, coming out a survivor after all that. You know, that's an accomplishment in itself because we have so many women who've been through what she's been through as well as myself and didn't, you know, make it on the other side or still going through those abusive relationships or, you know, didn't report the fact that they were raped. And, you know, it's just a blessing when someone comes out on the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah, so without further ado, I'm going to bring in Miss Day.
Ladies.
Good evening, Monica. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Rhea is my co-host.
Good evening.
On the other
good
line.
Evening. How are you?
We're fantastic. We're
good.
Just great. So let's start off a bit, you know, basically I read your bio, and I want to focus on the fact of what exactly happened at this convention and what was the outcome of it.
Well, kind of what you read in the bio, I attended a church convention when I was about 11 years old. With my mother and one of the other church ladies. And this is one of the big conventions that they have, and so they have a lot of different vendors and different people coming from pretty much all over.
Right.
And I was in the church convention. I had to use the bathroom. I went out to use the restroom. A lot of different vendors, like I said, were there. And this, I remember seeing this particular guy, but not really paying attention or anything. I was by the elevator. I walked out with one of the church lady's daughter, and we went to the restroom. And then after that, we kind of walked around and was looking at some of the vendor tables. I believe one of the tables was one that we actually passed by, but I don't really remember, you know, everything from that. But the young lady sat and she went and was talking to someone that she knew, and so I sat by the elevator. And I might have been sitting there for a little bit, and I don't know when this gentleman or how he went about, but I remember the elevator door opening, and this guy grabbed me and brought me on the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
I was taken to the fourth floor, and he basically told me if I did what he asked me to do, that he wouldn't hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
He instructed me not to scream. He said he had a knife. I never actually saw the knife or anything, but he did threaten me and said that, you know, if I didn't do what he asked me to do, he would hurt me. So in this open stairwell, he raped me, what lasted maybe a few minutes of my life, maybe 10 minutes or whatever. It was a lifetime, and it was life-changing for me.
Right.
When he was done, he got up. You know, I did struggle with him for a little bit, but I was really scared and didn't know what this guy was capable of doing, so I complied. When he was done, he got up, and he went about his business. And I don't remember how I was reconnected with my mom. I'm sure with me being gone and missing, my mother, of course, started looking for me. I just remember being very, I guess, disoriented or whatever, going to the hospital, making the report, and giving the description the best way that I knew how. And they made the report, but the guy was never called.
Oh, wow.
So he pretty much was free, you know, and nothing ever happened with the case. For me, that was the time in my life where prior to this happening, I grew up in a two-parent home, Christian environment, you know, and I was pretty much a good student, you know, outgoing or whatever. And after this happened, my entire life just changed pretty much for the worse. I had a lot of different emotions going on, feeling neglected, feeling worthless, feeling disgusted, violated, just all of those different emotions that you experience from being violated. And as a result, that turned into, over a year or two's time, that turned into anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became a totally different child, pretty much out of control, you know, angry and getting in trouble in school, not really focused in school. I suppressed what happened, so I wasn't dealing with it. My parents tried to take me to counseling. I went to counseling, but counseling is not effective if you're not willing to talk about what's happened.
Right.
And so I really wasn't willing to talk about it. I wanted to suppress it like a lot of, you know, victims of abuse do.
Mm-hmm.
You try to just kind of forget that it happened and try to figure out how to make it go away. And so that was my story as well. I just wanted it to all go away and disappear. And it didn't. It just became a big ball of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the beginning of where everything just changed in my life.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this. Since you said they never caught the perpetrator, if they had caught him and prosecuted him, would that have made the pain a little different, or you just dealt with the pain the best way you knew how?
I don't know if it would have made things differently for me. I don't think it would have been different. I think I still would have dealt with someone has violated me, someone has, you know, took me against my will and done these things to me. So I don't know if it would have made it better. I guess, of course, naturally, at 11 years old, I'm just thinking, okay, yeah, they're going to catch this guy, you know, because it was at a church. I mean, it shouldn't have been that hard to find this particular person.
Mm-hmm.
But I later found out as an adult what actually happened with the case. And so what I found out is that because it was within a church environment and, you know, I guess sometimes when things happen in church, people want to keep stuff under the rug and, you know, not talk about it or whatever. Anyway, the case was actually closed.
Wow.
Yeah, so they didn't really make it a big deal as far as, you know, trying to really push to find this particular gentleman. And I think I found out as an adult, you know, when I went to kind of figure out whatever happened, I actually found out that my mother was a big portion of, you know, not really making a big deal out of it. And I don't understand that. You know, maybe she just, you know, didn't know how to handle something like this. I don't know. But, you know, I found out just with her being so involved with the church, you know, people just don't want to make a big deal out of, you know, situations, but it was a big deal. And, I mean, maybe now that she looks at it, I think maybe, you know, she may say, you know, I could have handled this differently. But a lot of times I find within churches, especially, you know, small environments and small towns, a lot of times people want to push things under the rug and just kind of act like it didn't happen.
Right. So how did that make you feel towards your mom, that she seemed to be more interested in keeping it quiet? So I guess it wouldn't bring any type of reproach on the church.
Angry, of course, but as a child, I did not know this. So, Gail, I actually didn't find this out until I probably was about 26 years old. I did an interview. I was doing a TV interview, and one of the questions was, you know, whatever happened with the case. And until that time, I hadn't really looked into the case. I hadn't really, you know, I really couldn't answer that question. So it sent me on a quest to go to the police department to have them look up the record and really find out, you know, what actually did happen. Because for me, I suppressed things, and then I just kind of went on this whole rampage of just making a lot of different choices and being in bad relationships. So I never followed through with what happened. So when I went on this quest, you know, to find out what happened, I found out that the case was closed, you know, and that my mother was a part of that decision making. It really, really broke my heart, you know.
Wow.
And at this age, I have a daughter of myself, so to think about that, it really just took me on a journey of how could a mother do this? Because for me, I look at my daughter and I'm like, you know what, if anyone ever hurt her, my gosh, you know, I would do everything in my power to get justice. So
right.
I couldn't understand that, you know. And it was really hard. I'll be honest, it was really, really hard to deal with. It was, it really made me kind of step back and kind of disconnect from my mother because I couldn't understand that, you know, especially being a mother, too. I just could not understand how she would protect the church, or it seemed to be like she was protecting the church over her own family. So it hurt, but over time I've learned to, one, you know, forgive, and two, to kind of look at it and say, well, maybe she did not understand how to deal with the situation. You know, maybe she just kind of wanted to keep things quiet and whatever. So it did affect our relationship, but, you know, we have kind of talked and, you know, we're building a better relationship. I won't say that it's 100%, but, you know, it is in a better place than where it was when I found this information out.
Right, right. And then you had mentioned that at 13 you had gotten into an abusive relationship. What was that all about?
Choices, being violated at 11 and just dealing with all those different emotions that come along with that, I tell people all the time, two things happen to a victim, and some victims shut down and they become silent. Some victims kind of lash out through anger and, you know, search for love and attention and protection and security, and sometimes that is associated with sex. And mm-hmm. So that's what happened with me. I went into this place of wanting to feel protected and wanting to feel secure and wanting to feel loved. And so I associated love with sex, and so I went on this journey of trying to find that, you know, feel this void of emptiness that I was feeling in the inside from being violated.
Right.
And I met a guy who was about 6 or 7 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
At 13, I was, like I said, getting in trouble, hanging with older crowds, running away from home and skipping school. And I, 13, I looked like I was 16, so I mm-hmm. got attention from older guys. And so I just kind of found myself making bad choices. And one of those choices was to deal with a 19-year-old guy, and he was abusive.
Okay, when he started abusing you, well, first of all, let me ask this. Were there any signs that he was an abusive person when you got into the relationship, or was that a progressive thing? Did he start verbally abusing you, and then it peaked to being physical abuse?
I would have to say, looking back at it, he was abusive from the beginning. But at 13, who's walking around talking to me about domestic violence and abuse? Nobody. So, you know, I'm afraid. I see what he's doing, but I'm too afraid to tell anyone. So I just kind of, you know, dealt with what was happening. When I look back at it, he was jealous. He was possessive. He was very aggressive. You know, and not just to me, but to other people. So, of course, those signs were definitely there, but I did not recognize those signs at that particular time.
So you was feeling that was the type of love that you was looking for, that this is what he was giving you at that particular time?
At that particular time, yes. You know, he was, I guess that he had this whole, I guess, thug thing about him. And so for me, I associated with, you know, he's a street guy. He, you know, pretty much, you know, gets respect in the street. He'll protect me and things like that. And that's how I was thinking. So I was kind of wanting that protection and then feeling like, you know, he cared about me and he loved me. Why? Because, you know, he had money. He was a drug dealer. So things that I wanted, I got, you know, and it was materialistic. So I thought, oh, that's love. But of course, you know, at 13 years old, I don't know what love is, you
right.
know. And so he's 19 years old, and, you know, he can pretty much say and do anything, you know, to make me think that he feels a certain way about me.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and
you had, right. Now, you said you had suppressed it. Just how long did you suppress it, and then when did you start talking about it, and who did you talk to about it with?
I suppressed it when I went into the juvenile center at 14, I was pretty much in counseling, group therapy, and things like that. And so that's when I really started, I guess, starting to talk about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I had one-on-one counselors, and then I also had group counselors. So I started kind of talking about it then, but not really getting it out like I needed to. I think I might have been maybe 19 or 20 when I first wrote about it in a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I began to share about, you know, what my experience was, that was kind of the beginning and the breakthrough of healing. So between the counseling at 14, 15, I talked about it, you know, I don't think I dealt with it, though. I think I talked about it. I, you know, counselors asked me questions, and we talked about it, but we didn't deal with what it really was that I was feeling in the inside and how this particular incident made me feel. And
right.
I started dealing with that when I wrote my book, and I had to deal with those emotions. I had to deal with what happened. I had to face, you know, that I was raped and I had been through this abuse, and what did that do to me, and how did that make me feel, and how do I get through this now? And I do believe that it's been through my writing, through sharing my story, through talking to other women and people who have been through what I've been through, and really every time that I share that, it's a healing process, because I think before you brought me on, you talked about, you know, how healing is every day. And it is. For a lot of people that have experienced domestic violence or sexual abuse, it's an everyday process. Just because it happened 15 years ago doesn't mean that it's gone. You know,
that's
for
true.
That victim, for that perpetrator, you know, they do what they do and they commit the crime and they rape you, they molest you, they beat you or whatever. And they're going about their business. But
right.
for that victim, it's an everyday process, because we're constantly reminded of it. You know, we have the flashbacks, we have the dreams, we have a scent that may come up, you know, something we smell that will remind us of that particular incident. And so it's an everyday process that we fight with to overcome and try to continue to heal.
Right, that is so true. So when you began to write about it, did that sort of like make you want to talk more about it, or you talked more about it before you began your writing?
The writing, the poetry is what opened me up to be comfortable enough to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started stepping out to do poetry, actually one of my girlfriends convinced me to go to an open mic, and it's Yancey's Nightclub that's in Raleigh. And they had the open mic, and she said, "Monica, you know, this poem that you have is really good, you know, and people really should hear it." And I was, you know, kind of shy, whatever. I was like, "I don't know, you know, because it's personal."
Right.
Well, she convinced me and gave me the courage to go and, you know, supported me. And so I went. And the night that I shared the poem, so many women and people came up to me hugging me and just saying, "Wow, girl, you just told my story, and I've been through that." And just sharing their stories with me. And I was like, wow, you know, I'm not out here by myself. I'm not alone.
Right.
So it was through poetry. That was like the beginning of my journey. And so in the beginning, I would just share my poems. I was comfortable with sharing my poems. I was not comfortable with talking about my story. But I was very comfortable with, you know, sharing my poem and reciting it. And then over time, I began to build the courage. You know, each time I would go share, I would talk about it a little bit, you know. And then the more and more, until now I have built, you know, an avenue where now I can talk about it, and it's not an issue, because I have, you know, overcome and I have survived this, and it's, I know that through my healing, I'm helping other people as well. So it's become my purpose to do this.
Okay, let me ask you this question. When I was raped, I was raped at 15, and I suppressed it for over 30 years, and I didn't start talking about it until three of my girlfriends had mentioned that they were raped by their biological fathers, and that's what had opened me up. And I wrote, I have four books published, and in three of my books, I, you know, wrote about incidents of, in my first book is a young lady who was in an abusive sexual relationship who was raped, and another young lady in the book who was molested, because I was molested as well as raped. And, you know, like I said, I had suppressed it all those years, and all those years I was really disliking this guy, wishing ill feelings on him. And finally, it wasn't, I can say within the last maybe 4 or 5 years was when I had decided to forgive him. So what I want to know from you is, even though they never caught the guy, or, you know, you may have even seen him and didn't recognize him to this day, because when I saw the guy who raped me, I didn't see him until I was like in my 40s, and I didn't even recognize him. But, you know, like I said, within these last 4 or 5 years, I've forgiven him. Have you forgiven the guy who raped you?
I have. And that was a part of the healing for me.
Right.
That's also a part of why I kind of started stand up, speak out, and wanted to do something different that was kind of different from other organizations. I not only want to work with the victims who've been abused, I actually want to see people who have molested and raped people to go through this whole process of rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that there's a thin line between a victim and an abuser. And I think that some people who are victimizing people, they have been abused at some point in their life. It may not be the same type of abuse that they are exhibiting, but there's some type of abuse that they have experienced. And so that kind of came to me during the process of me forgiving the guy who did this to me. If I was to see him today, I probably would not know who he is or any of that.
Right.
But I've often said, well, if I was to see him and then he walked past me, what would I do? You know, would I be angry or any of that? No, I would not.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to know, have you received help? And if you haven't, I would want to have some type of resource to be able to get him help, because that's just what I want. In order for us, it's a lot of agencies and organizations who say they want to decrease domestic violence, they want to stop the sexual assault and things like that. And I really believe that in order for us to do that, one, we have to not only, you know, deal with the victims, we also have to deal with rehabilitating those who are abusing. Because locking them up in a prison doesn't change their behavior.
Right.
So,
let me ask you this question as well. For some reason, I've wanted to ask this guy, why did he rape me? Because the particular night that he raped me I was with two other girls, and you know, I just, for some reason, it just bothered me, why did he rape me? Have you ever wanted, if you saw this guy and you had the chance to ask him, would you ever want to know why, or would you ask him why he raped you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that was the ongoing question that continues to ring, you know, in my mind. Why me? I mean, it was a big conference, a lot of different people. You know, that was a question that constantly would ring in my head. Like, why me out of anybody else? Like, you know, what did I do to deserve this? You know, because it changed my life. It really. I don't know where I would have been or what type of choices I would have made if that wouldn't have happened. And so it's been a part of my life. And so I do wonder that. And I probably would ask, you know, along with a lot of other questions too, but I would probably ask, you know, what was going on in your mind that when you saw me that you picked me out of anybody else, and why me? And I would really want to sit him down and tell him, look, let me tell you the night that you decided to do this and make this choice. Let me tell you why you went on with your life, what did I experience in my life and how it affected me. I would really want him to know that, because I think if more rapists and molesters, if they knew the effects, maybe if they heard that from the victim, maybe, you know, it might do something to them to change their behavior. I don't know. But I would definitely sit him down and tell him, this is what happened in my life, and this is the result of what happened from the day that you raped me.
Do you actually believe that rapists can be rehabilitated?
I think everyone can be rehabilitated. However, it's all about choices. It's all if that person is the willing participant to say, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to hurt people. You know, some people have gotten so caught up in being, you know, rape and domestic violence and all that. It's all about power and control.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are so caught up in, you know, wanting to control another individual, you know, getting off on hurting someone else or whatever, and they're so caught up in that they have no remorse for any human being or whatever. They're just cold people. But I believe that if they have the will, you know, in them to really want to change their behaviors, that, yes, they can be rehabilitated.
Okay. Rhea, do you have any questions for Monica?
Yes, I have a question in regard to your domestic violence. When you first started, let's say, opening up about it, whether it was talking about it with a friend or your writing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you said you started through your poetry.
Mm-hmm.
In reference to that. Having not read any of your work, how detailed did you get in your poetry?
Very. Depending on the poem. I write from my heart, so mm-hmm. Depending on the poem, yeah, I like the poem that's about the rape. I do talk about it. I do kind of explain, you know, exactly what happened, what I felt, and things like that. So, just depending on the poem. I mean, I write from my heart. I don't try to sugarcoat, because a lot of the writing, I was writing for myself, so it wasn't for me to go at the time I wrote it. It wasn't about me sharing it with anyone. It was about me getting out what I felt. So a lot of them, yeah, is really real, it's full of passion, and it's detailed.
I was curious. Part of my curiosity was of the selfish nature. I started being abused at 15. By the guy that I later married and the who fathered my children.
Mm-hmm.
And as a woman of 49 years old, when I look back over that time in my life,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say there's blanks there, because I can actually tell you detailed, you know, situations and things such as that, and
mm-hmm.
remember that better than I remember most things. But
mm-hmm.
part of the reason I ask that question is because of what the feeling is that I get now in regard to it. And
mm-hmm.
there's always a level of confusion that comes up, because the woman I am today cannot reconcile with the person that I was. And that's why I was
mm-hmm.
asking that question.
Mm-hmm. I understand where you're coming from.
The piece that you had sent me, is that we're going to listen to that. So this is an expression, I guess, of releasing those feelings that you had when you had gotten raped. So we're going to listen to that, okay?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Take me into another world where I can be free, and erase the pain that leaves bloodstains and scars that never healed. I could not reveal the open wounds that stitches can conceal, stealing my heart away with no delay. You portrayed innocence and faithfulness, yet your insecurities and hatefulness showed your unfaithfulness. It was not necessary to argue or debate. If I had waited patiently so many nights to turn to days, I was not astonished or amazed. My woman's intuition forewarned me, but I failed to listen. Often reminisce on the good times, but those moments we miss. Making decisions with your head without a brain explained to me as a man it was hard to maintain, and I should not fret or complain because protection was provided. But that was a complete lie, because you entered my soul with no protection or contraceptive to protect my heart. Instead, you infected me with your unfaithful disease, and this is just as deadly as HIV, for I believe you were trying to kill me. You were destroying my mind mentally, stabbing my soul internally, and murdering my spirit spiritually. Emotionally, I was deceased. 6 feet deep, buried under earth, because my worth wasn't worth being a part of your life. In spite of my sleepless nights, I did all I could do to be the perfect wife. But nothing I did delighted you. Over and over again, I tried to unite with you, but you were so stuck in one place, unable to erase yesterday. And the same tune continued to play, the same sad song. What could I do? My body could not endure another bruise. I played to win, yet I always lose. Confused, misused, and abused. I had to make a choice, so I choose to leave. My reason? deserve so much more than what you had to offer me. I wanted to control my own destiny and not have some man controlling me. My best bet was to let go and leave. Allow this chapter in my book to end as I begin the sequel to a new Genesis and start the beginning. Gathering the pieces to my broken heart and mending my mind, body, and soul back together again. I could no longer pretend. For 7 long years, I watched the tears fall like rain in the... come to your seats. When will there be peace? When can I release so I can rebuild? A woman not made of bricks this time, but made of steel. You will no longer tear me down with your terrorist attacks, because tonight I take my life back. It belongs.
Rhea?
I had to get you off mute.
I think we all put that on mute.
I think I was the first one to come off mute. But how did that sound to you? You know, that sounded very descriptive to me and very detailed of an abusive relationship.
It did. And first of all, I love that you put it to music.
Mm-hmm.
You have to listen past the music, but the music, to me, aids you in opening up to listen more. But it also invoked a question in me. Did you get sick behind that? Is that something you're willing to talk about?
I'm sorry. Say that again. I couldn't really hear you.
I'm sorry. Hold it. I got a fan in the background. So that was one of the reasons I put you on mute. Did you get sick behind that?
Did I get sick?
Yes.
Physically, mentally, from what aspect?
No. Physically. Okay, because you spoke about AIDS. And you spoke about, you said two things in the midst of that, in the midst of your writing. And
mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, was that just where your man went, or is that part of your, a part of what happened to you?
It's kind of, it's that particular piece is kind of, I guess I'm speaking in metaphor, so it's
okay.
Not that I physically went, you know, got sick, but more so... that's what it made me feel like.
Gotcha.
Going through
gotcha.
That particular type of abuse.
And very valid and very accurate at that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people probably don't even look at it from that particular standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But when I heard that part, I said, oh, okay, I didn't hear that. So I just wanted to know, did it just, you know, broaden, but okay.
Right, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
So now you're an activist for women in abusive relationships. What type of programs do you provide for the women, and you know what age group of women are you working with?
Well, when I first started this outreach, I was focused on working with women. But what I found is that there are so many other agencies and organizations that already work with women. And what I was coming across when I went out to speak and do my poetry and share it at different places is that I had a lot of young people that came to me who were, had been molested, had been, you know, sexually assaulted or raped, or, you know, were in situations where there was abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really, after a few years, changed my vision, because I felt like working with women, you know, I was just duplicating the services. You know, I wasn't offering anything that was different or unique that, you know, I was just going to be another agency that was going to work with women. And we have a lot of them. So what I did was I thought about my own situation and then, you know, talking to some of my supporters, I realized that what wasn't out there was that an organization that worked with teens and children who have been in the home where there's domestic violence or they have been in a teen dating violence relationship.
Right.
And so I just thought about my life and I said, well, you know what? You know, the things that happened to me, it happened when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
It was in my teen years and it trickled into my, you know, early adult life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it made sense to me to operate and work with teens and children. And so I started this outreach program called Stand Up, Speak Out, and we are a art therapy-focused outreach program that works with teens and children who have been in the homes where there's domestic violence. And our approach is a little different. We're looking to use art therapy, so that's writing poetry, journaling, creative writing, dance, art, things of that nature to kind of help children learn how to channel negative behaviors and negative feelings into helping them better understand what has happened, you know, and then helping them kind of express those feelings. A lot of times children don't talk. I think about myself. You know, I went to counseling. They tried to get me to talk. I was not going to talk. Now, if they would have put a pen and a piece of paper in front of me, I probably could have wrote you a poem or wrote you a journal entry about what it is that I feel, you
right.
know, and how it made me feel. So that's what we're trying to do is kind of use the whole art therapy component to help kids. So we are we're not new. I have been doing a lot of, I guess, outreach programs and stuff, but I could still consider ourselves a very new organization. We're grassroots and we're kind of just out in the community right now, so we don't have direct clients that we work with, but what we do is we go out into the community and do community outreach. So right now we're doing a lot of workshops and demonstrations out in the community. We are looking to provide support groups for teens and children, as well as a mentor program and an art summer camp and after-school program. So those are the things that we're looking to do here in the near future.
So what age range are these children, these young adults that you're helping?
The children, I mean, it can really start from elementary all the way up. So we are not and I will say up until maybe, you know, 19, 20 or something like that, we are not putting an age limit on, you know, who it is that we work with. We're working with teens. We're working with children. And so that's our main focus. If you are, you know, a woman, you know, or whatever, there are agencies that, you know, can help because we have a lot of them here in North Carolina, here in the Raleigh-Durham area. So we're not trying to duplicate that. What we're trying to do is offer the service that these other organizations don't offer. So if you have a child who has been in the home where there was domestic violence, people don't look at that and say, hey, that child is a victim too, but that child is because they saw it. And so what we know through research and study is that children who grow up in a home where there's domestic violence and abuse, they have a chance of becoming abusive as well or being in a relationship where there's abuse when in their adult life. So we're trying to work with those kids and try to help them. If they've seen abuse, they've heard it, they've been verbally abused, or if they're in a teen dating violence situation, you know, we're trying to get to them and educate them in hopes to prevent this from continuing the cycle.
Okay, any of the go on, Rhea,
what has
sorry.
The reception been like?
Say that again.
What has the reception been like? How has your program been received?
It's well received. It's well received. Like I said, right now, one of the biggest things that we're doing is our workshops. So we have a lot of different workshops. We have a workshop that's called Black Eyes Doesn't Equal Love. It's about domestic violence. We have Cyber Teens, which focuses on, you know, internet violence and internet safety and things like that that's based around teens, each one of our workshops has an art component. So our workshops are very interactive. You will not come there and sit and hear a lecture. We are very interactive, and, you know, we move and we do a lot of different things. So we use, you know, some workshops we have collages that we do. Some workshops we have reenactments and skits that we do to kind of bring forth what we're, the message that we're trying to get across. So it's been well received. You know, we do some fundraising events where we go out and we talk about Stand Up, Speak Out, and people are really into what we're doing because we're offering something different, not like other agencies where we're just doing support groups, the 24-hour hotline, you know, the transitional home and things like that. We're actually offering a different component, which makes us very unique. So we are well received.
Okay. Are the families involved in with these with their children as well? And if they are, in what capacity? Because it, you know, if you're going to give therapy and you know, helping the children out, it seems that the family should need some type of counseling as well, especially if a child is coming from an abusive family. So how is that helping the family? Say the mom is the abusive person, is help getting to her as well?
Ultimately, yes. That's one of the things that we plan to do. I have a background in psychology, so that's one thing that I am looking to do. I don't have my PhD yet, but that's one of the things that I definitely have in mind. And so, yes, what I want to do is bring counselors on, and I have some people that I have talked to that are definitely, you know, into our program. But like I said, we're really brand new when it comes to really launching out to bring in the counseling and the whole family therapy. So we're not even offering the therapy portion yet. Right now we're just doing our community outreach. Ultimately, our support groups will have our counselors, and so what we're trying to do there is to, we will bring those families in, and we will have, you know, the children as well into those sessions. But our main focus is to work with the teens and the children because, like I said, we're collaborating with other agencies. Like we have the Durham Crisis Response Center, who I do a lot of work with. They have the Durham Access that does, you know, work with children. And so we're coming in as, I guess, a collaborative effort to say they're receiving therapy here. This is what we want. We want to focus on the children and the teens because a lot of the agencies, they have programs for women and children, but they don't offer extensive help for the children. So the children might be in a support group where they're getting, you know, some counseling or whatever, but what good is counseling going to do if that child is not being effective and not expressing themselves? And a lot of children, they don't know how to say, hey, this is what happened to me and this is how it made me feel. So that's why we're trying to use this art component to kind of help. But as I said, right now we are the only, if you go to our website, we have four different components to our outreach program, and that's mentor, that's our mentoring program, that's our support group, and that's our community outreach, and then we have our artistic enrichment program, which is the after school and the summer camp. And mm-hmm. So the only component that we are offering right at this particular moment is our community outreach, and that's our workshops and demonstrations and presentations that we're offering to the community.
Okay, you want to give a shout-out to what that website is?
Absolutely. The website is standupspeakout-nc.org. Again, that's standupspeakout-nc.org.
NC?
Mm-hmm, North Carolina. Yeah.
.org. Okay. Is there a, how long is the individual involved in the programs, or is this an ongoing thing, or you give them 6 months, a year, or, you know, how does that work as well?
Ultimately, it would be, you know, therapy and healing is ongoing. So ultimately what I see is for the kids to definitely be in the program for at least a year and so that they are getting, you know, the help that they need. And then, of course, the mentor program, you know, they would be connected with a mentor. And so, you know, that would be ongoing. So once they have, let's say, gone through the support group and the counseling and things like that, you know, they would still be connected with a mentor that would be with them. But ultimately, I see them being in the program for at least a year.
Oh, okay. Rhea, do you have any more questions for Monica?
No, not at this time. Very interesting, and I know I'm glad to hear that it's well received, because I know children are not as easy. They're not as easy to open up.
Right. Right.
About what they feeling or experiencing. So, it's interesting. And what? Oh, I do have another question. I'm sorry. Because you put the NC in there, is it your goal to branch out to other states, maybe, or anything of that nature?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, that is actually the goal. I am looking to, once I think here in Durham, this will be the headquarters, but I do see a vision of it being in other places. So that's why the NC is there. So I'm hoping that we can definitely, once we kind of get it concrete here in North Carolina, that we will be able to branch out to other areas.
Okay, that sounds
great. Good. Idea.
Yeah, yes, it does. So with that being said, what are your plans, say, 5 years from now? What do you hope to have accomplished, and where do you think you'll be at in 5 years from now?
5 years from now, I plan to hopefully have the Stand Up Speak Out in North Carolina up and really going and being successful, as well as within those 5 years, I hope I will be able to branch out and network with other people in other states like Virginia and Georgia. Those are the next two that I'm really looking at, the next two areas that I'm looking at to kind of bring this component to those areas. So I'm hoping that the message will get out, you know, and people will definitely visit the site and be able to see what we're doing and want to be a part. So, you know, I'm being led by where God wants me to be. And so if it's God's will for this to be, you know, the headquarters and stand-ups, we got to be in other areas, that's where we're going to go. But definitely I'm going to continue speaking and just doing what I'm supposed to do within my purpose. So.
Oh. Okay, well, then that was just wonderful. And I do appreciate you coming on tonight. And, you know, I hope anyone who's out there listening gets something out of, you know, this particular episode of Delicious Talk, and her website, standupspeakout-nc.org, is up in the chat room. And also your website, which is monicaday.com, right?
Absolutely.
And that's in the chat room. So I'm going to get ready and close the show out. And like I said, I appreciate you coming on, and I wish you the best in any and all your endeavors that you're involved in.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on the show. And I really do appreciate it, and I hope there's something that I said that has inspired and hopefully helped someone tonight.
Most definitely, most definitely. So with that being said, you have a good weekend.
All right.
Rhea, you have a good weekend. And
you
anytime
also.
You want to come back, Monica, just, you know, shoot me an email, or you can call me or whatever. And we didn't get to talk about your book, but real quick, you want to give out the title of your book again?
Absolutely. The title of the book is called And You Thought You Had Problems? Well, This Is My Life. It's available in any major bookstore. You can also purchase it online at my website at monicaday.com. The music that you heard tonight, that is from my CD, 7 Days of Freedom, which is also available on my website too. And any book or CD that you purchase from me, a percentage of the proceeds will go towards Stand Up Speak Out in our program. So we hope that you will support.
Oh, okay. All right, then. With that being said, thanks, everybody, for coming out. The guests I had in the chat room, Tammy Gibbs Jones, who has a show on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. That's entertainment. So check her out every Wednesday. Her show is going to change, I think, sometime next month. It's going to be coming on at 2, but right now it's coming on at 1 every Wednesday afternoon. That's Tammy Gibbs Jones. That's entertainment. Rhea, thanks again, darling. Monica, you
Thank
have a beautiful
you.
Weekend. See you guys next week. I'll be getting in touch with you. Okay, darling. I'll be getting in touch with you to let you know about next week's show.
Yes.
And you have a great weekend as well.
All right, darling. Good night, everybody.
Right. Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for the support.